Glad to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. We're going to begin our program today by taking a look at drug companies and what influence they have over medicine and over our doctors in some cases. Dr. Kyle Holen is our guest today. Been with us in the past. He's an assistant professor of medicine at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health and practices at the UW-Paul-Carbone Comprehensive Cancer Center in Madison. So we're really pleased to have him today to talk about this whole issue. It's a kind of a sticky one, and I'm sure you'll have some questions or maybe you'll have some comments that want to join in with us. And certainly if you do, give us a call. Here's the number. It's 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Dr. Kyle Holen, welcome. Nice to have you back.
Thank you, Larry. Thanks for having me on.
We're going to examine how drug companies influence doctors. So, and you say there is some influence.
Yeah, well, I think it's hard for us as physicians to say that we are never influenced by drug companies. We certainly see, we accept honorariums from drug companies occasionally to give drug companies our advice. We accept research funding from drug companies to perform our research. We're on speaker bureaus. We accept money from them to give certain talks. And it's hard for me to imagine that the money that doctors accept from these drug companies doesn't in some way affect their medical decisions.
Some of that is probably good.
Well, that's true. A lot of the information that we receive about certain drugs comes from the pharmaceutical representatives, and a lot of that information is accurate. You have to take the information that you receive from pharmaceutical representatives with lots of grains of salt.
Yeah.
Because it may not be completely impartial.
Is the system that we have set up, is it just not a good system or a good way of, doctors are paid for the work they do. And the more work you do, I suppose, the more money you make.
Well, so, yeah, there's a whole variety of influences on doctors. And, of course, one of the influences that we're talking about today is the drug companies that influence doctors. But other influences include just our general healthcare system. Our healthcare system today is set up predominantly as a fee-for-service system. And so that means that doctors are paid for the amount of services they do. Because of that, sometimes doctors are influenced to do more procedures, and occasionally, doctors may do procedures that may not be necessary because of the financial incentives to do more procedures. So there's a variety of influences on doctors today, and I think it's important that patients know about these influences so they can make good decisions with their doctors about treatments.
Maybe in your case, you work with cancer, that whole area of cancer. Give us some examples of where that might be a situation.
Well, what's really interesting is if I give a talk in front of a group of physicians at a conference or convention, it's very important and it's mandated, actually, that I, before I give my talk, I list all my conflicts of interest. What that means is I tell all the doctors where I receive honorarium, who I receive research money from, if I have stock ownership interests in various pharmaceutical companies. And I do that before I give all these talks to the doctors. But in no way do I do this before I see a patient.
No.
So patients never know what type of money I receive from a variety of pharmaceutical companies. And I think if a patient knew that I may receive a $15,000 check from Genentech, who makes a drug called bevacizumab, and I'm prescribing that for the patient, they may want to know that I'm receiving all this money from them as part of making this decision about whether it's the best treatment.
Yeah, and in some cases, as I understand it, their doctors can receive a bonus or payment for recommending certain drugs over other drugs where they may not be receiving.
Well, so that's true. A lot of oncologists in particular have ownership interests in the pharmacy in their office. And if the pharmacy is making quite a bit of money on certain drugs that they use for cancer, a lot of that money goes back to supplement the doctor's salary. So in this country, it turns out that doctors can make a significant amount of money by prescribing certain drugs over other drugs. I think that hopefully that doesn't significantly influence a doctor's decision. I think in the overwhelming majority of cases, the doctors have the patient's best interests at heart and are always prescribing the best medications. However, I have to believe that occasionally when there's a choice between no treatment and making sure people are getting best supportive care and good nutrition and exercise, occasionally doctors might lean towards prescribing another chemotherapy because they receive money from the chemotherapy. Oncologists receive money for the charges related to the administration of chemotherapy. And it may lean doctors one way over as opposed to another.
Rita in Watertown has a question or comment, so let's go there. Rita, hi. Thank you for calling.
I am compelled to call because of an experience that I have had. This has to do with osteoporosis drugs. I had two readings which perhaps signified that I needed something other than Fosamax, which I could not take, etc. And so I went to a specialist on osteoporosis, endocrinology, etc. And I went in having looked up all kinds of alternatives for Fosamax, etc., because I couldn't take them. It upset me so. So I went in. I felt very knowledgeable with a lot of my questions written down. And what happened was it appeared to me that what the questions I were asking was not what this doctor had in mind at all. He had predetermined that certain people at certain levels took certain drugs, and he had a drug in mind. The first month is given to you free by the drug company. The second month and thereon, you pay. And it turned out the drug was $600 a month. And as I began to explore more about this drug, I found out it was good for the day you injected it and had no longevity when you stopped the injections. And so I questioned this. And at that point, the office personnel got very upset. You're not going to quit. You're not going to quit. Wow. And I said, well, not this month, but I'm really questioning this drug. And then the drugstore that I had put the prescription in called me and said, don't forget to get your prescription renewed. And I began to smell not so hot. So I finally said, after 2 months of paying $1,200 for a drug that had no residual, I felt that they must be getting something back to be so frantic about getting me to keep using it. And that's my comment.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that highlights a lot of important issues in regards to the influences that drug companies have on prescribing. And I think one of the issues that highlights is the days of giving out these free samples, I think, have to stop. Because what it happens is it lures people in to start using the drug. And once they're using it, it's hard to change because either it's been fairly effective or there haven't been many side effects. But you don't realize what the costs are when you get that free month. Nobody asks how much it is if you start on the free month of drug. But if you have to pay for it from day one, then you might have a second thought about, is this really the best drug for me?
Yeah. Rita, thanks for sharing that with us. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Jerry in Green Bay, I believe, is next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, guys. I got a question. I have a little bit of history of high cholesterol in the family. My sister and my grandmother had it. My grandmother was 92, and they told her she should start taking cholesterol meds. It was up around 300, and she ate pretty much the way she always ate all her life. But anyhow, I just had a physical a week ago, and mine came back 304, the same as last year, and I've been exercising. I cut out cheese and sausage, and but my HDLs are 61, but my LDLs and triglycerides are rather high, like around 200.
You know, we're actually not going to be prescribing today or talking too much. And Jerry, thanks a lot for calling. I want to make that clear that I want to stick with the conversation that we've got, which relates not necessarily to somebody's high cholesterol, but more to the medicines involved and whether drug companies and doctors are working together to provide the proper medications. And I guess we can talk about his situation in the in this whole area, of course, because there are a lot of low cholesterol or cholesterol lowering drugs out there.
Yeah, there are quite a few, and I would hope that a doctor that would prescribing a medicine for him would look at the generic medications as alternatives to some of the more expensive drugs that are still on patent.
Yeah, and I saw a story recently on, and here's another sort of a sideline to this, that some drug patent holders are paying off generic manufacturers.
Yeah.
So they won't compete.
Yeah, can you believe that? Yeah, it's a little sickening, actually, that generic companies won't even be able to make the drug because they're getting paid a huge amount of money so that they don't make the drug, so that the pharmaceutical company can still make a significant profit, because the profits are quite high for some of these drugs. I don't know how many people know about some of the drugs that we use in cancer. I can highlight, but there's a combination of chemotherapy that I use for colon cancer patients that can cost as much as $14,000 a month. That's for one patient for 1 month.
Oh, man.
And if you multiply that by the number of people that have colon cancer, 40,000 times the number of months that they receive the treatment, it's just a staggering how much these medicines cost.
Well, in this case, the Cephalon was the company, and they paid, I think, $200 million to the generic companies not to produce the generic version of Provigil, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Provigil, yeah.
Provigil, is that how it's pronounced?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Provigil, and you know, in the meantime, they made something like $2 billion.
If the profits are more than what it costs to pay off a generic company to make the drug, then I understand where they're coming from.
Dr. Kyle Holen, our guest today, assistant professor of medicine at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. He practices at the UW Paul Carbone Comprehensive Center, Cancer Comprehensive Center in Madison. Really pleased to have him with us. And certainly if you want to join in, maybe a comment or experience to share, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. I'm Larry Mueller. Carmen Jackson, our on-air producer on this, the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking drug companies and their influence over medicine with Dr. Kyle Holen from the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Pleased to have him along, and certainly join in with your questions at 800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions. You want to weigh in on that. You mentioned $14,000 or that roughly for a month. I mean, do you have to prescribe that very often?
It's my first line treatment for people with colon cancer. So I give that pretty much every day I'm in clinic.
Wow. And who pays for it?
Insurance companies.
Insurance companies pay
for
it.
Yeah. Fortunately for chemotherapy, in most cases, people do not have co-pays. So for at least for IV chemotherapies. So patients never see the bills or almost never. And I don't think patients fully understand how much these treatments cost.
Would it be better if patients saw the bills? Or if patients had to pay for part of it?
Well, unfortunately, I don't think patients have a lot of other options. And I think this is the best therapy for them. And so I think this is what they need. I do think we need to find more ways to control costs for medicines. There seem to be no cost control measures currently for any medication. If a drug company comes up with a medication that is FDA approved, they can set any price that they want on that medication. And in fact, there's an interesting story about one medication that I currently use in my practice, where after the first couple of years of using the medication, the price of the drug went up. And the reason why is because the company thought that doctors wanted it more and thought it was more important. And it had nothing to do with production costs or a plant going down or anything else. It had everything to do with the perception by oncologists that the drug was more important. And because of that perception, they increased the price of the drug.
Oh, man. And there's no way to free market?
It's a free market. Yeah, I mean, there's no way to control it. In many countries, like Canada, they have a national system for paying for drugs, and they can barter with drug companies to try and come up with lower prices. And that's why in Canada, the prices are a third of the cost is what they are here in the U.S. But we don't have a system like that here in the U.S., and it's unfortunate.
Carrie and Nina has a question or comment. Carrie, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. You know, it's funny that you all are talking about this. I just went to a free presentation on a certain neurological syndrome. That part doesn't matter. But the neurologist was speaking to a packed house, and she only recommended drugs, and specifically only two. And some people in the audience wanted to know if there were some non-drug options, and the neurologist completely brushed her off and said she had no idea if there were any other options like vitamins or supplements or exercises or any other non-drug options. And I was trying to squirm in my seat because she kept coming back to the drug options. She had this huge presentation of these, only these two. And so I was kind of wondering what was going on there. And so that was my comment. And my other question is, why aren't prescription insurance companies clamping down on this? Because they are paying.
Good questions. What do you think, Dr. Holland?
Well, first of all, I appreciate your comment. I think the next step would be to see what the conflict of interest is for that speaker and see if they're getting paid by a specific company to talk about those drugs that the speaker mentioned. As far as health insurance companies, they are trying to limit the costs of the medication, but there's a whole variety of healthcare companies across the U.S., and they don't have a sizable enough block to be able to control the prices of medications. We occasionally at the University of Wisconsin can receive some of these medications a little bit cheaper because we prescribe them so much that our pharmacy has bargained for a little bit cheaper prices. We need to do more, clearly.
And how would I find out the connection between the doctor and the drug company?
Yeah, another good question.
Well, before any speaker talks about an ailment or specific treatments, they really should have a slide at the very beginning of their talk about their conflict of interest. I do that for all of my talks, to have my conflict of interest statement. And if the speaker doesn't mention it, then the organizers of the conference should have on their records what each individual speaker's conflict of interest is. So you should be able to contact the organizers of the conference and see what the speaker's conflict of interest is.
Certainly.
I will absolutely do that. Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah. You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, it's really something that should be, you're absolutely right, it should be right up front before a person hears the speech.
Mm-hmm.
Dave in Janesville, your turn now. Hi, Dave. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I was on my way to the clinic this morning to a doctor which used to prescribe me Provigil. And there was another drug that worked better, but he wouldn't let me take that. He would just keep insisting that I take this Provigil. And ironically, at the same time, my insurance deductible was due, and I found out it was like $900 for a prescription. Well, we didn't have that kind of money laying around to pay for it because my wife's on Copaxone, which is $15,000 a month. So we were whittling that down and then found out this, and then this other drug was $34 a month, and he would not prescribe it for me. So I just thought there was some flags going off there.
Yeah. A lot of people ask me that. As patients, how do you determine whether or not your doctor is prescribing the appropriate medications and is not under some influence from drug companies? And I think that's impossible for patients to know and to figure out. And the only way for them to do that is to seek a second opinion. and to try and find another doctor. And if there are two doctors that both have the same opinion about the treatment, then I think it's something that you should follow. But outside of a second opinion, it would be hard for a patient to analyze the data and to figure out if these treatments are best for them. And, you know, you really need to have another expert weigh in.
And then you almost have to go to a different clinic.
Definitely, yeah, because all the clinic doctors are exposed to roughly the same influences, and you'd have to go to a doctor that's part of a different healthcare system, certainly.
I tried that, and then you mentioned what happened, and all of a sudden they can't get you in.
Yeah, and I'm familiar with a couple of alternatives to Provigil, and there are some generic alternatives that are a lot cheaper. Sometimes they don't work as well, and sometimes they're taken more than once a day. So perhaps that's one of the reasons why your doctor is reluctant. But I think talking with your doctor about it and perhaps seeking out another opinion would be my best advice for you.
Try it, Dave. Anyway, thank you very much for calling. John and Big Ben, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi. I would like to relate an experience. Recently I was had some heart issues and was referred by my primary care physician to a cardiologist. I had a procedure performed, and then I was given Lipitor and Plavix, I believe, as heart meds. Subsequently, I came across an article in the March issue of Consumer Reports about Lipitor. Apparently, Pfizer, the manufacturer of this drug, has launched an advertising blitz because in 2 years its patents are going to run out, and they are attempting to convince doctors and their patients that there is nothing better for cholesterol reduction than Lipitor. My cost, if I were to buy retail, is $125 for a 30-day supply. I talked to my cardiologist about getting off of it. I mentioned red yeast rice as a cholesterol reducing agent that's natural and that some patients have had good success with it. He said, yes, I've heard about that. He referred me back to my primary care physician who has used this very successfully, and I now am on that. But he told me something about Lipitor and Pfizer that really made me angry. Lipitor is the most prescribed drug in the world, and Pfizer has probably recovered their developmental costs on this a million times over, yet they still continue to charge $125 for 30 pills. He said you could get this drug from Canada made on the very same assembly line for half the price. He said, I'll tell you something else. You could get this same drug, not made on the same assembly line, but from an Indian pharmaceutical company. He is an Indian, by the way, subcontinent. And he said, this drug is manufactured and marketed at a profit for a nickel a pill. The same thing for the Plavix. Now, what justification does Pfizer have for charging this outrageous price when this drug can be manufactured so cheaply elsewhere?
Yeah, those are good questions. First of all, I want to applaud you for taking a leadership role in your healthcare and making sure that you're getting adequate treatment and looking for generic alternatives. Because if it weren't for patients like yourself, a lot of people would just go along with paying these exorbitant amount of prices for drugs. As far as your question regarding the prices of drugs, like we talked about before, that we don't have any price controls on medications currently. And I think if you asked Pfizer about their pricing, they would say, yes, the amount of money that they've recouped on Lipitor has exceeded their development costs, but they are developing new drugs all the time, and in order to develop new medications, they need to make a certain amount of profits. And unfortunately, drug companies are not required to open up their books completely and say, this is what we're spending money on as far as research and development and advertising and whatnot. So we don't really know how much of the money that they're making on Lipitor is going into the development of new medications. I can tell you that the CEO of Pfizer is making a pretty good salary. And so some of that money might be going to some executives at Pfizer. But we need a better way of looking at pricing and pricing controls in the U.S. And that's the only way that we'll get lower prices of drugs.
Do you think there's any chance of that?
Well, I think there could be. You know, we've got possibly a couple of candidates running for president that might be able to change that. I don't think that the current candidates have come out with a comprehensive plan of controlling drug prices. There's a formidable lobby from pharmaceutical industry that we'd have to fight against in order to have some price controls on drugs. But I think it's people like the folks that have called in today that have the biggest voice. And if we can all come to some consensus that we need price controls on drugs, then I think it'll happen.
Yeah. John, I thank you. I want to get some others a chance to join in, but I appreciate your call. Phil in Hebron, I believe, is next. Let's go to Phil. Hi, Phil.
Good morning, gentlemen. I have a quick question for you, Doc. I read a book about the drug industry, and main point of the book was the fact that the Americans, with their high drug prices compared to the Canadians, the Europeans, UK, and things like that, are paying those high prices because they get to pay all the research costs on any new drug, and the rest of the world goes on a ride on the Americans' back. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that part of that is true. You know, the best way to develop new drugs in the ideal world would be to have our federal government pay the price, because then it would be without influence, and we could have academic people, researchers, decide which drugs develop more research and which drugs are important, and be somewhat unbiased in regards to reporting the results. However, in lieu of that, most drug companies do spend a significant portion of their budgets on developing new drugs. And I've been part of developing new drugs as faculty at the University of Wisconsin. And I have to say that they do develop these drugs without bias, and they involve the academic community to make sure that the development proceeds in the right way. And the FDA has fairly tight controls over development. Now, because the U.S. Pays a lot more for these drugs, clearly the largest market is in the U.S., and we are paying for a significant portion of the development of these new drugs. But there are a lot of drugs that are being developed outside of the U.S. A drug company called Sanofi Aventis came up with a drug called oxaliplatin. That's probably the most widely prescribed drug for colon cancer currently. And so there are drug companies outside of the U.S. that are also developing drugs. And so we don't pay the sole costs of drug development, certainly.
Do the ones outside the U.S. operate the same way that the ones inside?
Oh, well, a lot of their profits come from the U.S. too.
Gotcha. All right. Thanks, Phil. Mike in Madison, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. I understand that drug companies know how much of their drugs my doctor prescribes. How is this possible if I take my prescription to an independent pharmacy?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I've had pharmaceutical representatives come to me and say, Doc, your prescriptions for oxaliplatin are down this month. Why is that? And it's kind of scary that they have this information.
How do they get it?
Well, it turns out that pharmacies are paid to release their lists of prescriptions, and they get fairly high amounts of money for this. And if a doctor is part of the American Medical Association, they can be tracked as far as their DEA numbers and their license numbers. And when the license number is on a prescription, there can be tracking between the pharmacy and the AMA, and those lists from the AMA can then be sold to drug companies that can then give it to their local pharmaceutical representative. And I'm not going to tell you that this happens in all cases. I think it's a minority of cases. But certainly what I do know that is a fact is that pharmaceutical representatives and drug companies know exactly what the amount of prescriptions are for a given area in a given zip code. They may not always be able to track it to a certain doctor, but they can track it down to a certain zip code. And because not many people are prescribing oxaliplatin, if the oxaliplatin prescriptions go down, then they know that a large part of that is because that I wasn't prescribing as much personally.
But your jaw dropped a little bit when they brought that up.
I don't know how much oxaliplatin I'm prescribing, honestly. So that was news to me that I wasn't prescribing as much. But I don't know how to respond to those questions, honestly.
Well, the university hospitals has some systems in place for how it prescribes. If I'm not mistaken, don't you have a sort of a check and balance on what you do in terms of prescribing drugs?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. We have, at least in oncology, we have something called the Chemotherapy Review Council. And what we've done is we've gotten some experts in the field to get together and approve certain regimens for various cancers. And unless the regimen is approved, the doctor cannot prescribe that regimen. And it goes through a fairly rigorous test. We have to know what the price of the drug is, what the alternatives are. We have to present the data that supports this combination. And unless the whole council approves that this is a good idea, the regimen will not be approved. And we hope that starting this process, it will give us a somewhat impartial take on what chemotherapy is prescribed at the university.
Hmm. Interesting. Holly in Rib Lake, your turn now. Hi, Holly.
Hi. I've been getting a prescription for Effexor XR for quite a few years, and the insurance company, I used to pay the copay, but now they've decided they don't want to cover it anymore, and I just found out what it all costs for 1 month's supply. My husband hit the roof. Anyhow, my insurance lady was working real hard, and one of the other options I've got, because I don't want to mess with something if it ain't broke, especially my brain, and basically to check to some of these people, if you have a low income, some of the drug companies might help you out with that a little bit. We're applying for that. I don't know if we'll qualify yet for sure or not, but at least it's an option to think about. The frustration I'm having is I've had very good luck with the extended life of the Effexor, and I hate messing with Zoloft or Paxil. What do you do?
Yeah, you know, thanks to the drug company, I guess, for changing their policy. It's very frustrating when drug companies all of a sudden change what they're doing, and you're stuck, basically. I agree with you. If something is working well for you, it's hard to change. And you're doing the right thing by looking for alternatives. And one alternative, like you're doing, is most drug companies have a drug assistance program. Now, generally, the requirement is quite low as far as your income. I think in many cases, you have to be earning less than $20,000 a year or even $15,000, depending on the drug company. But that's one way. Another way is just to talk to your pharmacist. I know at the University of Wisconsin, we have pharmacists who are willing to talk to drug companies about receiving medications for cases that fall outside of the income requirements. We have occasionally people that have received medications on studies, and sometimes a study would give you free medications. So there's a variety of ways that you can try and find these medications, and sometimes you can receive the medication a little bit cheaper from Canada, as we mentioned, and find another way to receive the medication and shop around different pharmacies. Different pharmacies may charge very different prices for some of these medications, so you may want to just do a little bit more research, and hopefully you'll get it through the drug assistance program.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Laura in Janesville, your turn now. Hi, Laura.
Hi. I just have a comment. I have a website that I think a lot of people may find beneficial. It's called nofreelunch.org. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but it does talk about providers that you can find that will not be led by the different drug companies to prescribe certain medications, and it's for physicians and patients alike to use. And the other thing I was going to point out, I don't know if this has been brought up, but all the other little perks that people in healthcare have gotten. Mm-hmm. I'm a nurse, and I've been doing this for 20 years, and I've seen plenty of lunches catered in. People are given tickets to go to dinner theaters and downhill skiing and Green Bay Packer tickets and Whistling Straits golf passes that are all at the drug expense, the drug company expense. And I have always thought that that isn't right.
Yeah, I wholly agree with you. And in fact, thanks for bringing up nofreelunch.org because I've been a proponent of theirs and donated money to them for quite some time now. So people who are interested should definitely look that up. But my policy is I don't accept drug company gifts, period. Mm-hmm. Whether it's a pen or a free trip to Hawaii. It doesn't matter. There's no easy way to cut off how high the gift should be. And that's the only way to, I think, prevent you from being influenced from gifts from drug companies. And I don't think it's right. In fact, I have to applaud some of my colleagues. I travel out to Mauston, Wisconsin to see patients out there, and they get free lunches every single day from drug companies. But since I've been there, they've decided to have a potluck on the days that I'm there. And so we now all bring in our own food. And it's nice for the days I'm there, but I'm hoping that maybe they'll change that policy and it'll be no drug company lunches for every day instead of just the days that I'm present.
I agree.
Thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Appreciate it very much. And Dr. Holland, here we are. Out of time. Boy, the time flew by.
I guess so, yeah.
So you're kind of an advocate for going online to nofreelunch.org.
Yep. It's a great site. PNHP is also a good site, Physicians for a National Healthcare Program. PNHP.org is a good site, and they talk a little bit about price controls for drug companies. I know most of your listeners are really like to do more research on these topics. And so those are a couple of great sites, but certainly I can provide more if people want to contact the station.
We'll forward it along. Yeah.
Great.
Absolutely. Great. Thank you, Kyle.
Thank you.
Dr. Kyle Holland is Assistant Professor of Medicine at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. He practices at the UW Paul Carbone Comprehensive Cancer Center in Madison. We'll have him back and we'll talk about this some more. Well, I tell you, he and I both were coughing and had some runny noses. And just in time to help us out, Dr. Bill Scheckler actually will be along, chair of the Wisconsin Medical Society's Council on Health and the Public. I don't know if he'll help us out. But anyway, we're going to talk about flu. There's some updating that needs to be done. And I've got some questions for him, and I bet you do too. So we'll be talking with Dr. William Scheckler coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.